mine and yours. And you don't want no pressure, what but a backup and withdrawal. Cause trust me when I tell you, you don't want that you can crawl. And you don't want to see inside of my...
Chapter 85. I'm in so much trouble, Aang groaned, rubbing at his sore arrow. Although it was more like sore everything. He didn't feel as bad as he had after Azula had zapped him. Nothing had ever felt as bad as waking up after Azula's lightning. But every once in a while, his muscles just seemed to want to twitch, like the sneakiest all-over case of the hiccups ever. Which kind of made sense. Master Gyatso had told him hiccups happened when the muscles in your diaphragm got into an argument with your brain about when you were supposed to be breathing. And sometimes the only way to get both of them to agree was to hold your breath as long as you could, so both sides got the idea that they were supposed to quit it already. Aang thumped the back of his head against a mossy tree and startled. 100 years without the Avatar, I was in the ice. I wasn't breathing. Weird thought. Crazy as Boomy. But if Master Gyatso and Guru Patek and everybody were right, and the four nations were supposed to be balanced, the Fire Nation trying to take over the world was one big hiccup. Well, if holding your breath doesn't work, Aang grumbled, the next thing to try is one big scare. No, I've got to stop kidding myself. I'm not just blasting away war balloons. Aang hugged himself, vaguely wondering why his clothes weren't all scratchy. Dry, he could understand. He'd hit the water, but he was out of it now. And, well, who knew how long he'd been out of it, period. Plenty of time to dry out. But why weren't his clothes all salty? And that was avoiding the hard part. Again. Aang took a deep breath and tried. If I was just blasting war balloons, then Ozai wouldn't have stopped me. Because if it was just balloons, then he wouldn't have been there. There are people on those balloons. And he had to accept that. He had to remember that. Because air was about truth. A bender had to know why he was bending if he wanted the wind to answer. And if he tried to tell himself he was just blasting balloons, he was lying. Which made him want to shiver and shake. Even in air, rainforest warm. Air monks weren't supposed to lie. It shouldn't be possible. But I did. Even for just a little while, I did. And that was awful. Almost as awful as the truth. He couldn't stop the balloons without killing people. Maybe the Avatar was supposed to be detached, but he was a master airbender first, and bending the wind to take down those balloons was tricky bending to start with, and any bending just got harder when it was tangled up with your emotions. And there was no way bending the wind to take the fleet down wasn't going to make him a shaking mess, because he didn't want to kill people, even if they were part of the Fire Army. Even if they wanted to melt the whole North Pole, he wanted to stop them, but he didn't want to kill them. He didn't want to kill anybody, not even Ozai. And the thought that the only way he could stop Ozai was to kill a whole balloon of crew, people who might be like Zuko before Toph dragged him off on an adventure, maybe even some firebender who might not be a good guy, but maybe thought he was doing the right thing. It just made him sick. It's wrong. It's just all wrong. And it wasn't fair. His nightmares had always had Ozai as, well, as a kind of festival play monster. Bandy legs and beady eyes and a beard with fire all over the place. Not a real human person at all. Not a man like Zhao or Long Feng or even the mayor of Qin Village. Not even a crazy person like Azula. Maybe she was spooky and awful and evil. But if Ozai was her teacher, then she was doing what her teacher wanted. And Aang kind of understood that. A little. Funny. He knew Ozai had taught Azula. but somehow his nightmares had never zapped him with lightning. Maybe that's because I can't remember the lightning, Aang muttered to himself. I know she did it. I kinda sorta remember her with sparks all around her, but I can't remember it. It was just Ba Sing Se and then the beach and gah. He thumped his head back against the trunk again. Monkey feathers. No wonder Toph got so gur-arg trying to teach me. I can't even stay on one track when I'm trying. And the track was that Ozai was a person, just like everybody else. Okay, maybe not just like everybody else. Normal people didn't hit their own soldiers with lightning to get at an enemy. Aang shuddered, remembering the chaos of the Earth Army after Iroh had zapped General Gong. Remembering the smell, seared meat and ozone and death. Iroh had taken out a whole bunch of Earth Kingdom soldiers to make sure he got Gong. And Iroh was one of the good guys. Mostly. Ozai really wasn't a good guy. Which meant, Aang shivered just thinking about it. Maybe he didn't care how many of his own guys he fried, just as long as he got the one he was aiming for. Me. He really didn't want to think about that. He'd never wanted to be the Avatar. It wasn't right for someone to try to kill him because, well, not because of anything he'd done, just because he was there. Aang laced his fingers together, hands gripping his thoughts before they could slip again. Because it was just so easy. So air, to slip away from an awful here and now to a better future. A future where everything had been fixed, where it was fair. But I'm the Avatar. Aang watched his knuckles pale. If I have to balance the elements, then I can't just have the future. I have to have the past, and what didn't happen, and now. And part of now was, he couldn't look Ozai in the eye and kill him. He couldn't. It doesn't even make sense to try. Aang flung up his hands, thoroughly frustrated with the world, the spirits, and everybody who'd waited 100 years for the Avatar rather than fix their own problems. Because the Fire Lord wasn't a spirit problem. He was a human problem. The only spirits in this mess right now were local ones like Hei Bai and the Painted Lady. Spirits who were ticked off because their little patch of the world wasn't right. Agni and Yue and the other great spirits, they were just pulling strings in the shadows, like puppet masters, letting their human dolls take all the risks and the pain and... Oh, he was so messed up if he was comparing the great spirits to someone as dark as Hama. Someone like Ko? Aang smacked himself in the forehead, wishing Sokka was here to do it for him. Wishing anyone was here to do it for him. Arg! How can I figure out whose butt I really ought to kick when I can't even figure out where I am? Well, that was something he ought to be able to fix. Maybe his glider was a charred mess somewhere, but he could still climb. Look out, birds. Here I come. 3 branch dodges and a mouthful of leaves later, he was swaying at the top of a tree. Okay. Jungle, more jungle, ocean. And it was kind of weird to see the jungle wherever he'd washed up. He'd swear he was farther north than that. Wait, those waves didn't look right. Aang frowned, squinting at the sun-dazzled water. The waves didn't just look like water against a shore. More like the way water had splashed together behind the big Fire Nation ship he'd been on with Hakoda and everybody. He hoped Hakoda had made it to the North Pole okay. He missed them. I'm on an island. Islands don't move. What the heck? Maybe he'd hit his head when he got zapped. He did feel sore, even if he didn't feel any sorer on his head than anywhere else. Aang rubbed it to be sure, and shook his head. Nothing seemed to slosh around. He wasn't dizzy. He didn't think he'd hit his head. But how can an island be moving? Frowning, Aang skidded back down the tree trunk to thump his toes against the ground. Duh. If there's an earthbender around here somewhere, they could do it. They'd have to be as good as Toph, but hey, maybe the guys found me. The ground didn't feel right. Curious, Aang widened his stance, closed his eyes, and stomped his foot, listening. Roots and earth and not earth, not anything like rock or metal or ice or anything that would bend. If it's not rock, then maybe it really is moving. Which meant whatever he was on, it wasn't an island. So what was it? One way to find out. He pointed himself toward the ocean and started running. Splash! And ack! The water was just as cold as it should be, if he was still near where he'd hit the ocean. So why was the air tropical above the shore? Something huge whooshed past him, black and rugged as a wall of lava. The current tossed him as easily as a waterfall would a stray leaf, twisting down and down into dark water. Use the twist. Work with the water. Aang spun himself in the current, spiraling back up to the surface like a reverse whirlpool. Coughing, he treaded water. Woof, that was close. Ah! The current yanked at him again. Aang pulled a layer of ice under him and ran for it. Back on the shore, Aang squinted at the pattern of the waves. Regular ones over here seemed to match that weird current, a steady rhythm that fit that moving wall, regular as oars or fins. No way. He'd seen the statues and sketches in Wan Shi Tong's library, but nobody had ever seen a live one. Not in 1,000 years. Not since Avatar Yangchen died. Airbenders from an earth village, waterbenders on Kyoshi Island, firebenders hiding in Ba Sing Se. Just because he couldn't see it didn't mean it wasn't there. There was a warm feeling in his chest, something Aang hadn't felt in months, something he'd left on a terrible shore near Ba Sing Se and had never quite picked up again. Ice surfing halfway around the island, Aang dove into cold waves. The water was faintly milky, little creatures scattering light to cast the massive form he sought in the darkest shadow. But Aang felt the maelstrom of a slow blink, saw enormous amber eyes fix on him. Bigger than the Wani, a webbed claw lifted him toward the light. Aang breathed in as they breached the surface, watching torrents of seawater run from the edge of a shell like waterfalls. Hi, little brother. The lion turtle's voice thrummed through his bones like thunder. It has been a long time since another bender sought my counsel.
I could use anybody's help right now, Aang admitted. But I'm not really your little brother. Or, as far as he knew, anyway. Am I?
You bear within you the spirit of the world. My kind were its first mortal children, so we are kin.
Wow, you are that old?
Aang looked at the waves, still foaming under them. Evidently, the turtle lion had no problem swimming with just 3 feet. I guess you saw this whole mess get started, huh? A few ponderous strokes.
I saw Avatar Kesuk fall. Some might say that was the beginning.
Really, really old, Aang managed. You were there? What happened?
2 strokes. 3.
The Avatar is human, and sometimes humans go mad.
A long, slow exhalation.
The Avatar is spirit, and when spirits are injured by humans, there is always a cost.
But, Aang swallowed, if she went crazy, I've seen what the Avatar spirit can do when I'm not in control of it. It's scary. It can kill people. They had to stop her.
There is always a cost.
Waves and wind and silence.
Even for what is right.
Aang opened his mouth and closed it and felt like steam ought to be coming out of his ears. Great. That's just great. And now that cost has got a whole nation gone crazy. And how the heck am I supposed to fight that? He flung up his arms, automatically keeping his balance on slick scales. Avatar Kyoshi stopped Chin the Conqueror, sure, but all she had to do was stop Chin, one guy. Spirits are what I'm supposed to deal with, not Ozai, not the Fire Nation, spirits. And the balance of the world. If all the Fire Lords since Sozin have been trying to conquer the world. Quietly, just the shush and hiss of water being churned by massive flipper paws as the lion turtle waited patiently. Aang blinked. If all the Fire Lords since Sozin have been trying to conquer the world, then Ozai's not the real problem. He could feel the lion turtle's breath through his bones, like a silent earthquake. I'm going to have to think about that, Aang said quietly. But even if Ozai's not the problem, I've got to stop him from melting the Northern Water Tribe into the ocean, or a lot of people are going to die and nothing's going to get fixed.
The spirit of the world is the source of life.
The lion turtle seemed to slow, breath suddenly visible as frost as his flipper paw lifted higher.
Find your answers here.
Wobbling, Aang stepped off onto blue ice. Whoa, wait, where am I? More blue ice rose in the distance, shaped and formed into a soaring wall. One circle centered in the highest arch, bearing the stylized waves of the water tribe. Oh. Zuko eyed Lieutenant Sadao, whose expression was sinking fast, from eager helpfulness to about as miserable as a junior officer could get and still be alive. Took a deliberate breath, trying to enjoy the salt air on the docks, rather than twitch as he watched the White Lotus pack up as much as they could of the archive onto a wooden, flammable, breakable Water Tribe ship. It wasn't as if Dragon's Wings Lord was lacking in other things to worry about. In the satchel he had slung over his shoulder was a whole sheaf of paperwork he was trying to commit to memory. A map of the current volcanic vents, Teo's estimates of how much pressure was left in Asagitatsu, and rough sketches of the current aerial defenses being set up. Sketches that were almost as rough as the defensive measures themselves. He knew all too well that even with Sokka cackling madly as he dove into helping bang devices together, everything they had was slapdash, makeshift, and mostly put together with a lot of string and good intentions. The thought of how they'd stored fire ice underwater in stone to have it when they needed it had worry gnawing at Zuko's gut. Hopefully they'd designed the stone vaults to leak slowly rather than blow, and any stray gases should just get caught up in the flames already burning over the harbor. But if Ozai's airships dropped a bomb in just the wrong place? So Zuko sat on his temper and picked his next words very carefully. I'm going where? Sadao winced. Sir, since when? It was very sudden, sir. Oh, I'll just bet it was. Behind the lieutenant, Seaman Saburo murmured to his hawk and tossed her up to fly. Seaman? Zuko said pointedly. Nothing kills sailors faster than screwed up command chains, sir. The seaman shrugged. Sent the captain a note that somebody slipped up. Somebody slipped, all right? Zuko growled. And he wanted to march onto Master Paku's ship and straighten someone out with his bare hands. Stop. Think.
On that ship is where Uncle... No. Where White Lotus General Iroh wants you. So that's the last place you want to be. And it hurt to think like that. Like salt water on a burn. Uncle Iroh wasn't Azula. But the situation jangled down all his nerves, and he'd have to be dead to ignore the similarities. Appeal to family, appeal to duty, and a ship that was not and would not be under his command. Stepping onto that deck might not be as stupid as running the blockade after Aang on the solstice, but he wasn't going to count on it. Lieutenant, General Iroh is on that ship? He could see the lump in Sadao's throat as the man gulped. He was 10 minutes ago, sir. Zuko nodded once. Convey my respects. He deliberately pitched his voice to Carrie. And inform General Iroh I would like to speak to him at his earliest convenience. Thank Agni for military formalities. You could stamp down a lot of fury in icily polite language. Which, knowing firebenders, was probably the point. No need. Iroh stepped out into plain view on the deck, a gracious smile splitting his beard. Perhaps we could discuss this over tea? And for one instant, Zuko couldn't help but see the Fire Lords red and black above Azula's ship, a so-called honor guard waiting to take them prisoners. Breathe. Just breathe. He blinked and made himself see wood and blue pennants and curious water tribe sailors finding other places on deck to be. I don't think so, Zuko said evenly. Civil. He was going to be civil, as befit a great name. It'd be very inconvenient if your ship should happen to slip its moorings while we were discussing this. That set Iroh's teeth on edge. Zuko could see it in the slightest crease of a frown around gold eyes.
I admit, Master Paku's ship will wish to take advantage of the tide, but surely we have time for a polite conversation.
And that politeness would drag him around and around in circles until Iroh got what he wanted. No. You might. I don't. Keep it civil. I'm not leaving. Iroh leaned on the railing, taking a deep, patient breath.
We have discussed this.
No, we haven't. Facts. Stick to facts. Sokka and Aang think the invasion fleet is going to take the High Wind Road.
Impressive as the young man is, Sokka is not trained in logistics.
Iroh drummed fingers on the railing.
Osen Zakura is the closest secure colony to the Northern Water Tribe. You know yourself that the currents travel there. Those are the winds nearest the surface. Those are the ones my brother and his men will know of.
Headache. He had one already. Uncle, you don't know that.
It is the only sensible...
What the hell about this entire year has been sensible? Damn it, keep a grip. You taught me to always make sure I considered every line of attack. If the invasion does go by way of Onsen Zakura, and you and the other White Lotus Masters head for the North Pole to fend it off, fine. You're masters. They need you. But I'm not a master. You drummed that into my head often enough. Up there, I'm just one more half-trained bender. But if Sokka is right and the fleet comes this way, Asagi Tatsu's still touch and go. They need me here.
Master Piandao has surely begun his pupil on the arts of war, as well as the arts of the sword,
Iroh said patiently.
But I believe I have a bit more experience in these matters.
Which made no sense. Who in the world has experience with airships? Zuko said pointedly.
Oh, wait. That might be the people who've been working on them for the past 3 years. While we were chasing a phantom no one had seen in a century.
He shook his head.
Sokka's been on that flying furball for a half a year straight. When it comes to air tactics, I think he knows what he's talking about.
Which was a mistake. He knew that even as he said it.
Iroh straightened and gave him the look of a disappointed teacher.
Nephew, you are well aware. Amateurs study tactics. Professionals study logistics.
I am right, and you are the failing amateur.
Hagni, he'd seen that look so often.
And it was one look too many, on top of a lifetime of looks, and he just couldn't take it anymore.
You just can't let it go. Zuko's fingers curled. He barely felt nails prick his palms. You can't believe my father found an opening that you didn't.
There is no opening.
Yes, there is. The High Wind Road is up there. And if the invasion follows that road, the Fire Lord can hit three things he hates in one day. The Northern Water Tribe, the Earth Kingdom, and me.
Breathe in. Hold before he started firing off sparks, just because. Hand out.
Screw logistics, Uncle. A chance to hit one target efficiently versus commandeering every soldier in sight to grind all your opponents into dust one more time? I know my family.
No, you do not.
Iroh shook his head, as if he couldn't believe they were having this conversation.
You left the Fire Nation as a child in anger and pain long before your father could show you the depth of his knowledge. I have been there since my brother was born. I know his training. He will focus on the one target he must destroy to set the balance of the world forever awry. The birthplace of the next Avatar.
He thumped a fist into his palm, eyes shadowed.
But he will not prevail. We will defend the Northern Water Tribe. Sozin's line will not fail the world again.
A child. That's all he... Zuko felt himself start to tremble, swallowed hard and held himself steady.
With all the will years of surviving had trained into him.
Don't fight fire with fire. Sidestep. Redirect.
So repaying the damage great-grandfather did to the balance of the world is more important than anything else.
Iroh sighed, fingers patting the railing in relief.
I knew you would understand, nephew.
Yes, I do. And he didn't know whether to set the whole dock on fire or fold into a cold, bereft ball of misery.
Can't do either. People need me.
His men needed him. Men like Lieutenant Sado and Seaman Saburo, all but holding their breath as they watched this play out. Because until it did, they didn't know who to follow.
General Iroh interfered with my chain of command.
Zuko focused on that and not on the cold wailing in his heart.
Snapped his fingers, letting sparks cascade to the dock.
Lieutenant, see that General Iroh and his associates have all they need to depart.
In the midst of turning away, Iroh's head whipped back towards him.
I understand, Zuko said, letting the words cut bone deep.
I understand that even the Dragon of the West can fail to properly calculate his strategic options, because I am not Lieutenant, and you are not going to sacrifice my people to fix the damage you did to the world as Azulon's general.
Iroh's jaw worked for a moment, soundless.
Zuko.
Don't let him recover. You can't.
You think Lieutenant's death served some greater purpose.
Wake up, Zuko snarled.
The spirits don't care that much.
Iroh drew a crown prince's dignity around him like formal robes.
You have no right to say such things.
You're right, Zuko said icily.
I don't. I am exiled, outcast, disinherited, which means I am officially banned from repaying any penance Sozin might owe the spirits. Whatever I do, even if I save the Avatar's life, it won't count. He gestured at the dock, the harbor, the rough buildings behind them. All I can do is what the spirits have left me. I am the great name of Dragon's Wings. I will not abandon my people. A thread of smoke drifted from the railing. You cannot abandon your duty to the spirits. The White Lotus does not command here. His head hurt, his heart hurt, and he could feel the trembling in fire and waves as Asagi Tatsu sensed the threat of leaving. But he had to draw the line. Here, now. He had to succeed where Azulon and Ozai had failed and pin down the man who'd made skating out of inconvenient loyalties the center of his life. Oh, great. Like I'm ever going to pull that off. But it didn't matter if he did, so long as everyone around him knew where Iroh's loyalty wasn't. I am the Lord of Dragon's Wings, Zuko stated. Either you are loyal to me or you are loyal to the White Lotus. Choose. A few yards away, Captain G held his ground with an effort. He dropped down from Suzudon's decks to the dock as soon as he'd seen the hawk coming. He didn't need a message to read that angry set of the prince's shoulders. I wasn't fast enough. Then again, maybe no one could have been fast enough. The gauntlet Zuko had just thrown down, declare your loyalty, was the kind no one walked away from without blood, death, and fire. Iroh was silent. Zuko drew a sharp breath, nodded once, a short, tight movement that had G biting back the foulest curses a sailor knew. He'd seen that stiffness before. If General Iroh tried to argue his case now, while the prince was as word-lost as a dragon child could be, Zuko turned on his heel and stalked away. G exhaled in pure relief. Good. He knew he was in trouble. Now if I can just get Teruko to sit on him until his words come back. Except there was a more critical problem. Still standing in shock on the Northern Tribe ship's gangplank. Bad as he looks right now, the prince will just walk it off. Or find something that needs breaking. If I let General Iroh run loose after he's failed to claim loyalty here, well, that would be bad. Drawing himself up to his best parade stance, G nodded respectfully, loyal sailor of the clan, to a visiting lord. General Iroh, if you and your allies hope to reach the Northern Water Tribe before the comet, I think you need to leave. Now. Waves and the wind. Paku eyed the solitary figure at the railing, whom everyone else was carefully working around. I tried to tell you, you asked a waterbender to leave his tribe and fight his family. Do not speak to me. No fool. Paku fell silent.